Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello, I'm Tristan Riddell.
And I'm Matt Hansen.
And welcome to the Senate floor.
Talk nerdy to me.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
All right, this is episode 55 of The Senate Floor. Thank you so much for listening, downloading, and subscribing. We appreciate everything that you do for the network. And if you like the show, if you like the network, please go find The Senate Floor on iTunes or find Nerd Nuptial on iTunes or Aggressive Negotiations on iTunes and leave us a review. If you leave us a five-star review, we'll mention you on the podcast. We haven't checked in a long time. We should probably do that soon. So we will be mentioning people next week on the Senate floor of anybody who's given us a review. And also, everyone should check out Aggressive Negotiations right now because they have a contest going on where if you write them a review, and it doesn't even have to be five stars, it can be any kind of review, you'll be entered in for a contest and you actually get some really cool swag from the Aggressive Negotiations team. So, and regardless, everyone should check them out anyway. So, Matt, how are you doing? What's going on with you?
Man, so much is going on with me. I am just recovering my sanity after a week's worth of law school orientation. So, trying not to get overwhelmed and turning to my nerdy obsessions to try to find some comfort. It's not going to be horrible, but, you know, I'm glad that I have... you know, all my nerdy stuff to keep me distracted and happy.
Yeah, we were completely unsure of how your schedule was going to be once you started law school and everything like that. But then you got some really reassuring news from some people saying like, no, like keep your outlets, like keep your life. It's mandatory. It's necessary.
So basically I heard from a couple of second and third year law students that say, especially during the first semester, keep outside habits, still get together with friends, still do what you do. Otherwise, you will let law school consume your life and you'll go insane. So it sounds like, you know, knock on wood, that the schedule that I have is going to still be durable where I could still do this on a regular basis. So I'm very, very happy about that. The thought of leaving Tristan and Lee and the Nerd Party behind was just heartbreaking as much as I give them, as much as I tease them each week. They really are my close friends. So I'm glad I think I'll still be able to do this.
Well, that's fantastic. And that's the thing is that I won't give away everything, but the Senate floor is going to be evolving this fall. We won't give you details, but it's sticking around. We're not going anywhere, but it's going to be evolving. And you're going to get more people on the Senate floor and you're going to get more of a rotation. And because, you know, like when the fall starts every single year, you know, lives get a little crazier. Your life is getting crazier. My life is getting crazier. And so you're going to start seeing new show ideas, very interesting show ideas with interesting spin and new people. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, but don't worry. We're not, Tristan and I personally are not going anywhere, but good things are in store for the network. I think you guys will be really, really excited. I am, for sure.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm glad that you said that, because I do want to reassure the listeners and our longtime fans, because we've been doing this for a long time. We're not pod fading. We're not going away. This is still Matt and I's show. We're just going to diversify as much as possible and get some new blood and new ideas. It's going to be great.
We're ready to take it to the next step in our relationship, guys.
Okay, so what we're going to talk about today, our main topic for today is a little bit of a controversial topic, and we're going to stay positive. We're going to stay real, as it were. We're going to talk about a non-traditional casting or integrated casting. You may know of it as colorblind casting or blind casting, but we're going to be using that as a jumping off point to talk about and discuss whitewashing in Hollywood and in film. But before we get into that, we posed a question on Twitter a couple days ago at Join Nerd Party, which everyone should follow. If you're on Twitter, go to at Join Nerd Party and follow us, talk with us, tweet us. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/thenerdparty, where you can get updates on the shows and also interesting nerd news. But the question that we asked was, hey, you know, what was your favorite movie of the summer? What was your least favorite movie of the summer? Because you and Lee talked about that at length.
Yeah, it was sort of a follow-up question to the filibuster that Lee and I put out last week about summer 2016, and we got a lot of interesting responses and a lot of cool responses, and I think that, you know, for the most part, there seemed to be a pattern amongst much of the responses in terms of good and bad.
Yes, it's true. I think the most common answer we got for favorite was Civil War.
It seemed to be a combination of both Civil War and Star Trek, which were my favorites of the summer. And funnily enough, you should mention Civil War. On the eve of going back to law school, I can now happily report that my previous eight-time theater experience for Star Trek 2009 has officially been broken by Civil War.
That blows me away, that just the type of dedication that you have towards these movies that you love. Because when you love a movie, you go all out. Like, you are desperately in love with this movie. You will buy this movie an engagement ring if you love this movie enough.
I'll marry it. I'll buy all the variations of the DVD that will come out just for collector's items. Although maybe not anymore, since I think that this Civil War record is probably going to stand for a good long while, Tristan, only because it was the last one where I still had an income. So as much as I may love what's coming down the line with Infinity War, I think this 10 times that I've seen Civil War will stand for a good long while.
Now, there was this thing that when Batman v Superman came out, there was a pass that they released where they're like, okay, you could buy this pass for $40, $50 or something like that, and you could see the movie as many times as you wanted. Now, obviously, I know you don't like Batman v Superman. That's not the point of what I'm saying. But what I'm trying to say is that if they had something for Star Trek Beyond or Civil War like that, you would probably buy those passes, wouldn't you?
I probably would. You know, the danger is those passes are usually given out before the movie comes out, so you never know mm-hmm. which way the quality is going to go. But given my previous track record and my relationships with these movies, yeah, I probably would if I had the money, especially now.
Yeah, I'm always so jealous of Lee that he just pays a monthly fee in Scotland. And he gets to go to as many showings of any movie that he wants.
Why don't we? I would do that. I would do it too.
I really would.
Yeah.
You would get more of my money if you offered that pass.
Right? Because like we wouldn't have to worry about ticket prices anymore. We'd be more likely to buy stuff, the concessions at the place, now that we're not having to worry about ticket prices. And I'm pretty sure the theater gets most of the popcorn and soda money. So.
Oh yeah. Oh, absolutely. Huge markup on that. It's almost pure profit for them. But yeah, I would absolutely do that. But to get back to the question that we posed, it was no surprise that the least favorite or at least most disappointing movies during the summer were Suicide Squad.
Uh-huh.
And some people tried to sneak in Batman v Superman, but I had to remind them.
We had a whole debate about this behind the scenes, by the way, between many of the Nerd Party co-hosts about whether or not a March release counted as summer.
And both you and I were on the same part of the argument.
I know. Relish the day, Tristan.
Where, yeah, March, I'm sorry. No, March is, I don't care what kind of movie it was. I don't care if the biggest movie ever made was released in March. That is not a summer release.
Right, and it wasn't just my dislike of Batman v Superman that kept me from doing that. In fact, if it was, I probably would have argued for it. But I also argued that Winter Soldier, a movie that I love, was released in April, and therefore not a summer movie.
Yeah, exactly. And I think like even Lee, who hated Batman v Superman, was trying to say, "Oh yeah, no, he considered that movie a kickoff to the summer." Which I'm sorry, Lee, you're wrong. It's just absolutely wrong.
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, like, because we have these year-long blockbusters now. But to me, summer is that first weekend of May. It's usually a Marvel film these days. But whatever that first big release in May is when I consider the kickoff to the summer, going all the way through, I guess, August now.
Yeah, that's what I would say. I would say it was like, even May would be pushing it. But I think I think absolutely May, especially this year with Civil War, May to August. That's it. I feel like the first movie was Civil War and the last movie was Suicide Squad. And that's really funny that most people said their favorite was Civil War, their least favorite was Suicide Squad. So the summer pretty much just got worse and worse for them as it went on.
Well, I mean, you could listen to our show that we did. It was a very uneven summer, but thankfully, like I said, the other seemingly constant favorite besides Civil War was Star Trek Beyond, and that was a nice pick-me-up in the middle of summer.
Absolutely. Well, you know, one thing that we would love to hear from you guys, if you want to email us, you can email us at contact@thenerdparty, or you can go to our website at thenerdparty.com/contact, and from there, you can tell us what your favorite or least favorite movie was of the summer. What did you think of the summer schedule? You know, let us know. And you like Facebook is a big way that you can contact us too. And as we mentioned at the top of the show, you can go to facebook.com/thenerdparty. One other thing that I want to mention before we go into our main topic is, you know, we have a partner with lootcrate.com. We love these guys. They love us. Everyone should go to lootcrate.com/nerdparty and enter in the code nerdparty, and you'll save some money off of a subscription. You get about $40-some worth of geek material, like Pop Funkos, comic books, you know, action figures and everything like that. And you'll get that for less than $20. And if you go to lootcrate.com/nerdparty, enter in code nerdparty, you'll gain even more money off of that.
And if you don't, if you're questioning whether or not your $20 goes anywhere, if it's worth it, Tristan and his lovely wife did an unboxing video for one of their loot crates, and you can just see how much money your $20, how much stuff your $20 will give you.
Absolutely. And that video is located on our Facebook page, the aforementioned Facebook page, so you can check it out there. So let's go ahead and start our topic, a very, very sensitive topic. I think whenever you talk about race, you have the potential of offending certain people. I want to start this episode with the thought to you guys that we are not here trying to offend anyone of any race, color, creed, or any kind of position. We're not trying to stir the pot. We really just want to discuss how certain racial casting is affecting fandom. That's all we want to talk about, and talk about the positives and negatives of fan reaction. And we also want to start at the beginning of this podcast by admitting that I am a white male. I'm also a straight white male. And so I recognize my privilege. I have worked in Hollywood. I've worked in theater and video production. And so I've seen blind casting at work. I've seen whitewashing at work. And so I just wanted to say that off the bat, that I recognize the perspective that I'm coming from.
I am a double minority. Not only am I gay, but I'm also Hispanic. But I also realize that in addition to, you know, being a white-looking Hispanic with a very Caucasian name. Even though I am a double minority, I whatever I say in this podcast, I don't presume to speak for all minorities. I can only speak from my limited perspective.
I think that's it right there. Like, all we can speak of is from our own limited perspective. And so when we are talking, we're not trying to generalize. We're not trying to say that our viewpoints are applicable to everyone. We just want to make that clear. That we're not trying to offend anyone, but we are going to be talking about race.
Yeah, it's a bit of an entertainment / sociological analysis that we're doing here.
Yes, and so as I mentioned at the top of the show, we're going to talk about blind casting or non-traditional casting, however you want to call it. And I think for the purposes of this podcast, we're going to call it blind casting, and the antithesis of that with whitewashing. So
right,
this is how. I'll just give you the quick, this is how Wikipedia describes it. Blind casting is the practice of casting a role without considering the actor's ethnicity. Non-traditional casting is defined as the casting of ethnic minority and female actors in roles where race, ethnicity, or sex is not germane. All right, now with whitewashing, Wikipedia describes it as whitewashing is the casting practice in the film industry in the United States in which white actors are cast in historically non-white character roles. The film industry has a history of frequently casting white actors for roles involving persons of color. The practice is as old as the film industry itself. Okay, if you've been around online in the past couple of days, you recognize that this is not anything new. We've been talking about this for a long time, whether it's blind casting or whitewashing. But what kind of prompted this conversation is the casting announcement of Mary Jane Watson in Spider-Man Homecoming.
Right, which I just want to point out has not been officially confirmed by any source at Marvel. And I take anything that regarding casting, especially with these comic book movies, as with a massive grain of salt until I hear someone associated with the production or Marvel themselves come forward and say, yes, that she's her name is Zendaya playing Mary Jane Watson in Spider-Man Homecoming. That's what we think right now. But like I said, it's all up in the air at this point.
Now, does she just have one name like Cher or Madonna?
I think so. I think that's her, you know, as far as a stage name. Yes.
Okay. All right.
That would be, you know, if she's credited as that, that's what she's registered with the Screen Actors Guild.
Okay. Well, yeah, I think that's important to know that it hasn't been confirmed. But I feel like regardless, even the news of this possibly happening has garnered a huge response, way bigger than I thought it would be, especially right. with some of the more recent roles traditionally white roles casting people of color. Like just recently, you and I have talked a lot about Suicide Squad. You and Lee talked about Suicide Squad. Me and Matt, me and the girl, we talked about Suicide Squad a lot on this network and also mm-hmm. outside of the network. And Deadshot is a traditionally non-black person. And
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and it's was cast with Will Smith. I don't remember anyone really talking about it. Do you remember anybody talking about it?
No, I don't really remember anyone talking about it. Like I said, I didn't even know that the character was traditionally white, so the fact that no one raised a stink over it, I just assumed that he always was an African-American character. I wonder if introduce another element that I think might be interesting, but I wonder if the fact that Will Smith was already a big star and people already like him, whether that plays a factor into certain people forgiving source material changes in colorblind casting. Zendaya is a Disney Channel, former Disney Channel star, so her audience is very, very niche mm-hmm. When compared to someone like Will Smith. So maybe that is indeed a factor. I don't know.
See, I don't know either, because I feel like the fandom picks and chooses, you know, what they want to complain about when it comes to these issues, because we got Lawrence Fishburne as Perry White in Man of Steel and mm-hmm. Batman v Superman, and no one batted an eye because Lawrence Fishburne's awesome. And I think here's the main crux of it, is that I can understand if casting a person of color in a traditionally white role messes with the origins of that character or changes the backstory. Mm. You know what I'm saying? I can understand if people get upset because of that. Like if the race of said fictional character, we're not talking about historical character, we're not talking about making a movie about Nixon and casting him as a Hispanic man.
Right.
You know, we're talking about fictional comic book characters who have superpowers. All right. So many of these characters, their race is not part of the story. You know, it's not about their struggle being a minority in an all-white neighborhood, or being a homosexual, being raised to think that you're not normal. You know, like right. if that's the crux of the character, if that's a big portion of the character, then you should stay true to that character. Mm-hmm. But like with Deadshot, it doesn't really matter what his race is, because being white was never about Deadshot. You know, like Deadshot was never like, oh, I'm white and there's, you know, that defines me.
Right.
It was never that case. So why do you think people lost their mind over Mary Jane?
It's hard for me to say, because I'm not as familiar with the popularity of DC characters as much as you are. But it was Deadshot a big figure in the comics before Suicide Squad? He's a Batman villain, yes?
Yes, yeah.
Was he a big thing on the animated series? Did people were drawn to him, or did they do him at all in the animated series?
No, I don't remember him in the animated series, but I mean, he wasn't like as big as the Joker or anything like that. He was very small. Like he was very much a small part of the DC universe.
Okay, so I'm wondering if that might be the difference. The reason I ask is because Mary Jane Watson, for Spider-Man fans, that is a major character.
It's like the Lois Lane.
Yeah, exactly. So the fact that she has more of a presence in the comics means that I think people are more likely to have a specific picture of what she's supposed to look like in mind, because we've already seen it. You know, that Spider-Man animated series in the 90s, Well, not as popular as those Batman ones. Certainly, I do remember them being shown along with like the X-Men animated series. It was quite popular in its own respect. And, you know, my first knowledge of Mary Jane came from that series. And yes, she's a white redhead. And then, of course, we had Kirsten Dunst in the movies. And those, you know, whatever you think of the movies, they were very popular and well liked by a lot of people. And mostly stuck to their source material representations. So the fact that it's a bigger character and it's a character that people are familiar with and people have seen iterations of in the past, mm-hmm. they have a specific picture of what the person is supposed to look like. And for better or for worse, and I think it's kind of for worse in this case, they have a very specific image of she's supposed to be Caucasian and she's supposed to have red hair.
I keep hearing the red hair thing. You know, it's just like, it's like when you think Mary Jane Watson, you think red hair. You think supermodel, red hair, red hair, red hair, red hair. I feel like the only reason why it's so ingrained in our brains is because you don't normally see that much red hair in the States. Obviously we all know somebody with red hair, but you have to admit it's not as common as blonde. It's not as common as brunette. It's not as common as black. So when we see somebody with red hair, especially in pop culture, that becomes a defining characteristic of them. But this is very, when I keep hearing that, there's this, I'm trying to be kind here, but I feel like if that's your case, because a good friend of mine, a friend of mine who is not racist, came to me and tried to play devil's advocate, and he announced that he was playing devil's advocate just to get me to think about things, because I started complaining about the fan reaction of Mary Jane, and I was angry that people cared this much about her being black or being a person of color. And so he came to me and said, like, well, you know, he kind of said the same things that you said, like, this is what people have in their heads. You know, they grew up with this person looking a certain way, and having red hair is very distinct for her. And so it sticks in your brain. But the thing is, though, and that's true. And if that's your reasoning, that's true. But a lot of things that I saw online were, people were ignoring white and saying Caucasian and focusing on the red hair, because I feel like they could say that and it was really just code for black.
You think it's a more politically correct complaint to talk about the red hair versus the skin color?
Yes, I really do. That's the feeling that I got. Now, I don't know people's hearts. I can't read people's minds. But a lot of that felt like code to me.
Right. And it very well could be. I don't have as deep a connection to the character as some of these fans might. But that being said, when you tell me to picture Mary Jane Watson, I do picture someone with red hair.
Yeah.
And I consider that just to be a natural characteristic of the character, not because, you know, I hold any racial prejudice. It's just that the fact that, like I said, I watched that animated series and I watched the Sam Raimi movies, and that's just what comes to mind immediately.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And as it should, because that's what happens. I mean, like, when you are exposed to something for literally decades and you know, read it, and it's the same type of source material, you read it in the comics, you watch it in the movies, you watch it in the animated show, like, yeah, of course, that's going to be the first thing that comes in your brain. But the thing is, we should be an evolved race, we should be evolved people, and we should be evolved fans. So when you tell me Mary Jane Watson, and I go, okay, supermodel with red hair, like, I got the image in my head. And then somebody goes, okay, that's Mary Jane Watson that you knew, but we're going to cast her. And so she's not going to be a white redhead, but she's still going to be that very supermodel-esque type individual. And she's still going to have the same characteristics as Mary Jane, where it counts. And I go, okay, that's different than what I pictured, but all right. And then you move on, right? Don't you think that should be kind of your rationale?
I agree. I mean, I think, well, I'll tell you what my rationale is. I understand that, like you said, the first thing that comes to your mind when you hear Mary Jane Watson is supermodel with red hair. That being said, though, I think there's been enough iterations of that character where we've seen that. We saw that, you know, dating back to, I'm sure, the animated stuff from the 60s. I can't remember if she's in that series or not, but I'm assuming she is. She's such a big character.
Yeah,
we saw it in the 90s, and we saw it in live action already, so I think it's okay now in this third live action iteration of Spider-Man if we start taking a couple of liberties. I mean, yeah. We've had the traditional Mary Jane. Let's see if she is, if Zendaya is Mary Jane, let's see what she can do with it. Let's see what they go with, where they go with the character this time. I'm open to new ideas.
Yes, absolutely. And yeah, that's the thing, is that I understand. I get the argument where people say, let's stop changing traditionally white roles and start creating new characters who are people of color. I think I understand that reasoning. I get that idea. And to a certain extent, I agree with it. But at the same time, if you can maintain a character's characteristics while at the same time do blind casting where they could be Asian, Hispanic, Black, whatever, if you can do that and it doesn't affect the character, it just affects the appearance of the character, then why not? I mean, why not give it a try? Why not give it to the best person who's available, like the best actor available, and get some diversity at the same time? Because here's the thing, is that if you look at the past 75 years of comic book history, it was not a very diverse medium. It was not a diverse time. And it was not a good time for people of color in our country or other countries. So you had all these white men and all these white women. And so we're just now, just in the past 15, 20 years, we've been exploring those realms in film. And so, yeah, when we keep going to the well of all these old great stories that are ingrained in the zeitgeist and even our lexicon. Right. Like, it's going to be traditionally white roles. And so, but we are we have a much more evolved society, not much, but somewhat. So in order to reflect our current society, isn't it okay to diversify something that was traditionally white as long as you maintain the true characteristics of that character?
Yeah. The spirit of the character, I think, is the most important thing.
Yes.
I mean, I feel like, as much as sometimes we want to make Hollywood out to be the bad guy, I do feel like in terms of geek entertainment, we kind of send them mixed messages and mixed metaphors, because we are always crying out for, if not originality, then new takes on things. But then when they provide new takes on things, we put up our shields and reject it.
Yeah.
Me personally, like I said, I can only speak for myself. I am okay with changing up some things surface aspects of the character, let's say, as long as they maintain the essence of what makes them that character. Like I said, let's take something that you and I both really love, Tristan. If they came out tomorrow and announced, I don't know who, but let's say they announced an African-American actor was going to be the next James Bond.
Yes.
I would be okay with that as long as they still made him like Bond. If the film came out and the only difference was that he was now being played by Idris Elba, or, you know, whoever, you know, African-American actor. But as long as he still acted like Bond, I would be perfectly fine with that.
Yes, that took me a while to adjust to that idea, just because I had the knee-jerk reaction that everybody else did, where I was just like, wait, no, James Bond isn't black, he's white. But then I started thinking about it, I was like, oh, it doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter in the least, because he's been traditionally white, there's nothing about him that is specifically white. Not even his background.
No, not really. The only thing I insist on is that he comes from England or Great Britain.
If they want to do that next time, do it. Go for it. But here's something that I think upsets me, is that they're like, oh, well, it should be a woman next time. And I go, that's where I go, no. Let's make a secret agent. Let's make a 00 agent that's a woman. But James Bond isn't a woman. Because James Bond, those characteristics are very, very much a part of his gender.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like that can really be argued. I mean, would it be cool to have a Bond-like female character? Abso-friggin-lutely. Would I go pay money to see that franchise? Yes, I would.
Yeah, I would too.
But that's the thing, is that like Bond is so very much... like, that is such a huge part of the character, about him being a man and being something like being a stereotypical man, too. And even sometimes a misogynist.
Right.
And so if you made that into a woman, you'd have to change his backstory. And then it wouldn't be James Bond anymore, even if you named her Jane Bond or Jamie Bond. It wouldn't be the same character. So just create something new. And since that gender is a little bit different than what we're talking about with race, so if we want to get back to race, I want to talk about something where where blind casting kind of upset me, not to the point where I was going to like boycott anything like that, but with Supergirl, if you look at Jimmy Olsen.
Okay.
Jimmy Olsen has been traditionally white and small, skinny, you know, kind of like the underling in The Office, kind of like the nerd of The Office.
Right.
Of the Daily Planet. In Supergirl, they made him a tall, super handsome and muscular black man.
Right.
Who's confident in himself. And I don't care that he's black. I don't. Like, if you wanted to make Jimmy Olsen black, make him black. I don't care. Make him Asian. Make him Hispanic.
You care that he's not the college-age nerd anymore. Is that it?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, that is, like, make him nerdy. Make him, you know, like, he's the photographer, you know, like, at the Daily Planet. And he's always looking up to Lois and Clark and everything like that. But in this iteration, he's the art director of, you know, Catco Worldwide Media. And he's got a, you know, $1,000 smile. And I'm just like, that's not Jimmy Olsen. If you wanted to make Jimmy Olsen black, that's fine. But keep him Jimmy Olsen.
I think the issue you run into there is, like, because we got to talk about, you know, if we're going to do blind casting, what role are we blind casting? Because Jimmy Olsen has been that kind of character in the past. And I think that with the, again, this is very, very dangerous territory, but I'm just commenting. I think with the more politically correct goal, with the more politically correct goals in mind, I think people may be hesitant or reticent to recast a role that it was traditionally Caucasian if the role doesn't
portray minorities in a potentially negative light.
So yes. I mean, the argument could easily be, and I'm not making this argument, I'm just playing devil's advocate here, if they made him African-American but kept the old characteristics, it's like, well, why did you cast a minority in that role to be so subservient?
Yeah, meek or nerdy or, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a valid point. I think that's an absolutely valid point, and that probably went into their decision because they might have had an opening casting call for Jimmy Olsen, and, you know, all these different people showed up, and then they're like, oh, let's go with this guy. You know, like, he's pretty great. Or they sat out and said, you know what? We need more diversity in the DC universe, so let's cast a black Jimmy Olsen. And then maybe that conversation happened where they're like, yeah, but Jimmy Olsen is kind of, you know, kind of subservient, always looking up to, you know, like to Lois and Clark and everything like that. Maybe we should make him a little bit stronger of a character. That might have gone into it. But that's the thing, is if you're going to do that, then make somebody else. Because that's the thing. If they did the same thing to Jimmy Olsen and Supergirl as they did, but with a white actor, I would have had the same response.
Right.
I would have had the same criticisms.
Right. And what I'm saying is, and I really hope I'm not offending anyone by saying this, but I think if they had casted someone who was white or Caucasian in that role, they may not have been so tempted or pressured to change the characteristics of the character to make his character more progressive. I mean, yeah. There may not have been that temptation because there's no reason to, you know, make white people look more progressive. Yeah.
You know, and here's the thing, though, is that I've only seen a few clips of Jimmy, like, before the show came on. And so I may be completely misinterpreting the way that they're portraying the character. I want to say that to everybody because I have not watched a lot of Supergirl, so I may not know all of the backstory. This could be, you know, like, maybe this is an evolved Jimmy. You know, like, maybe this is an older Jimmy. You know, like, maybe this is him later in his career where he got more confident, he got more responsibility. You know, like, that could be the case. And if that's the case, then I say bravo and I take back everything I said. But I wanted to use that as a jumping off point.
Right.
To understand so that we could see both sides of the argument. Because personally, like I said, I don't think the Mary Jane Watson thing is any big deal. I think making Jimmy Olsen black is no big deal whatsoever, as long as you stay true to the character.
Or if you don't stay true to the character necessarily, you provide an in-universe reason for why he is at this certain point of his life, and then the nerd part of your brain can shut down and accept that and just go along for the ride.
Absolutely. And if that's what they did with Jimmy Olsen, then I think that's a fantastic idea. I think that's great. Now, I started asking myself, because that's the thing, is like I like to consider myself a progressive person, an evolved person. But at the same time, I have my hangups just like everybody else. And so I started asking myself, because you said like you don't know much about the DC universe, you're not as involved with Spider-Man as you are with other characters.
I don't know if this is where you're going, Tristan, but I kind of wanted to challenge you on this and get your thoughts. What would happen? What would go through your mind if they recast someone like Bruce Wayne?
Yes,
to be someone different.
That is exactly where I was going with that.
Okay,
like that. That is exactly where I was going with that. So I'm glad that you said that, because that's the thing, is that like I said, oh, these guys are whiners. You know, these people are racists. You know, they just want to complain. And then I was like, okay, Tristan, you know, like what if you took a character who you love? Who's the character that you love the most in comic books? Well, that's easy. That's Batman. So what if they changed his background? Like what if they changed his race? And I go, okay, wow. You know, like I really started thinking about it. And my immediate near jerk is like, well, they would never do that. And I was like, well, what if they did? And my gut reaction is I would not be okay with the changing of the race of Bruce Wayne. I would be okay with changing of the race of Batman.
So you're saying to, has there ever been a Batman equivalent of a Miles Morales, like for Spider-Man?
Well, there's been like many people have worn the cowl of Batman, like many people not Bruce Wayne have been Batman, or there have been like there's the Bat family where you have Batwing, who is a black man. And I think in the Batman Rebirth, he just gained a new sidekick who is a black young person. And so that I'm completely fine with, like if they want to make a black Batman, like the true mantle of Batman, I would be thumbs up for it 100%. But if they made Bruce Wayne black, or any kind of other race, like Hispanic or Asian or anything else, I would have an issue with it. And if I was being honest with myself, I would have an issue with it. But here's the reasoning. It's not because I love Bruce Wayne. It's not because I love Batman. It's because Bruce Wayne and his family have had centuries of wealth and privilege.
Gotcha.
In America.
Okay.
And if you change his race and change his family's race, that would severely complicate the backstory that we've all grown up with. Because that would add, like, that would just, like, you'd have to explain so many different things where you're just like, okay, are they, like, is the Wayne family, like, when the Wayne family was assisting people with the Underground Railroad, you know, was that family African-American? Were they free? Were they not? Were they millionaires? What's going on? You know, like it adds all of these questions to it that wouldn't really make sense unless they were white. Now, again, I'm not saying white is better. I'm saying whites were treated better for the past couple of centuries in America. There's no doubt about that. So that's where I feel like it would be kind of weird. But there is a way to go about that.
I was going to say, I can think of one way to instantly... Well, maybe not resolve all of your issues, but to present a scenario where that could happen and it could still be Bruce Wayne. What if I don't know if this is a defining part of his characteristic or not. I know his parents are very important to him, but what if Bruce Wayne is not the Wayne's biological child? What if they were an infertile couple and they adopted a young African-American boy and named him Bruce and made him the sole inheritor to their fortune?
That is the way around it. That's the thing, is that like I like that's the kind of rationale that I came to, where it's like, oh, if they did an adoption story, that could be really interesting, where you, obviously, like if they got him as a baby, it would have the same kind of impact once his parents were gunned down. And you know, like we're in a new age where there absolutely can be a black CEO of a corporation and a black billionaire, absolutely. So I guess with a caveat is like they could make Bruce Wayne black or Hispanic or Asian or whatever, as long as they kept Thomas and Martha Caucasian.
Right.
And I know some people listening are probably going to get offended by that. But that's my rationale, is that it's not about not wanting a different race in the role. It's really just about the backstory. And that's kind of the reality that we're in.
Right. And I can see where you're coming from, in the sense that if the Wayans are supposed to be this centuries-long wealth and important people, I mean, I know we're playing in a fantastical universe where there are Supermen and Wonder Woman and all that sort of stuff, but
yeah,
you know, American history just suggests that that would not be possible. I mean, because even people who are African American or minority CEOs now, you know, our history would suggest that they don't have centuries of history to back that up, at least here in America, because we, you know, of the way we treated minorities in the past. So,
exactly.
So there is a suspension of disbelief issue that I can understand with, but with that caveat of the adoption in mind or something similar, you would be okay with that because it allows your suspension of disbelief to be satisfied.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. Because that's the thing, is like right now I'm looking at black billionaires in the world right now. And of course you have Oprah Winfrey, you have Robert Smith, you have a few, like you have a lot of black billionaires, but a lot of them come from oil money overseas. And the Waynes are American. And so it's just, you have such a huge contingency of rich white people. I mean, there's no argument there. I mean, you have way more white people in the 1% than any other color. And so that is solely where my mind is coming from, is just from that perspective. I mean, like, also, apparently Michael Jordan is now worth $1.14 billion. That's pretty awesome. Good for him. But yeah, so like, I hope people understand where I'm coming from. But like we talked about, if they did an adoption storyline, I think that would be really interesting, where they did something where he would go like, you know, like after he was raised, after he was Batman, he comes across his birth parents somehow. You know, I think that would be interesting.
That would be interesting, and it would offer a new twist on, you know, the only origin story who I think, other than Spider-Man's, everybody knows.
Right. And also, that's interesting because one thing where, you know, people didn't complain about Deadshot. I don't think people didn't complain about Perry White, but people did complain about Mike B. Jordan,
yes,
in Fantastic Four. That's another thing that was really confusing to me as to why people would be upset about that. But they used an adoption storyline in that to have Sue be the adopted one.
Right. I thought, you know, as much as people complain about that movie, and it's not a great movie, it's not very good.
No.
But the thing is that aspect of it I thought was very cool.
Yeah. No, I loved it. And it wasn't, I mean, it was just like one line of dialogue. Reed was like, are you adopted? And she's like, yeah, he adopted me. And then they moved on. And then boom. You know, that's one line. Like, they were racially blind to the casting, but then realized that in order to be racially blind, they would have to explain certain things. And so they had one line of dialogue, and then they took care of it. And why does it matter that the Human Torch is any color other than white? I don't understand. What is so white about the Human Torch?
Well, yeah, I mean, again, not being familiar with comic history, there's nothing in the Human Torch's bio that I know that requires it, like Batman. Like, there's no history of that would make it more logical that he was Caucasian and always should be Caucasian. No, I completely agree. But, you know, we've been going on the colorblind casting for a while. Do you want to look real quickly at the other side of the coin?
We should. We absolutely should. Now, here's the thing. Before we get into that, I would like to mention there's one individual. Like, I posed the question online. I said, I was like, in your guys' opinion, you know, like, what's the difference between blind casting and whitewashing? And not just, like, most people just kind of gave me the technical definition. But the thing is, we all know the technical definition. And blind casting is essentially being racially blind, but casting a minority in a traditionally white role. Whitewashing is the opposite, where you have a traditionally minority role with a white actor.
Right.
So an individual who I asked if I could quote him, and he said yes, is, I don't know his real name. His username is Captain_Revo. And this is what he had to say about it. And I think this is really smart. He said, I think it's just being mindful that we are not at a place of equality yet, and representation of minorities really matters. If you give a typical white role to a minority person, it won't hurt white people, but it will boost minority representation. But if you give a typical minority role to a white person, it won't boost whites at all, but it will do damage to minorities. Maybe one day it won't matter at all, but it matters now, so it's all about being mindful of the current situation. I thought that was a great summation of how we should look at it.
Agreed. That's very succinct, and it presents an obvious reason why one is seen more as a problem than
yes.
the other.
That's the thing, is that with whitewashing, we don't need any help. As a white man, I do not need any help in my representation in pop culture.
Yeah, you don't feel like you're being underrepresented in Hollywood.
No, I am not. I am not at all. So if you take somebody like Deadshot and make him a person of color, I'm not going to go, man, you know, how are people going to know that white people can do certain things? You know, like, I'm not going to get angry. But if you show somebody who is Asian, Hispanic, Black, or any other race that I'm not mentioning, who's not normally seen in TV and film, and then you see them in this cool big budget movie that's going to be seen by millions of people and millions of dollars and sometimes billions of dollars are going to be spent on it, you're going to see this. You're going to see, like with Mary Jane Watson, they're going to, that you can just imagine that there's going to be some little Black girl who loves superhero movies, goes to see them, and then sees that one of her favorite characters looks like her.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's going to impact her in a very huge level.
Yeah.
And if a little white girl or white boy who would go see the same movie is still seeing Spider-Man and everybody else.
And you know, and not only that, but they are seeing these minorities portrayed in such a positive way that we can, you know, I hate to get all political and stuff, but I don't know if racism as a concept will ever truly die. But mm-hmm. but the more we do that, the more we represent in pop culture, the more archaic that form of thinking will become, I think. And
yes.
I think we should do everything possible to contribute to racism and racial stereotypes and prejudice becoming archaic forms of thinking.
I mean, there's a phrase that has kind of become cliche, but it's a good phrase to become cliche because it's the truth. Representation matters.
Yeah.
It absolutely does. Like, seeing somebody who looks like you, talks like you, acts like you, thinks like you on film, in comic books, on TV, in novels, that matters because you can identify with that person more. And I know that some people might be arguing the antithesis, saying like, well, what about, you know, like, what about the white kids? And I was like, there is enough. There is enough out there right now that, you know, changing some roles or creating these roles, it's not going to alienate any white individual.
Right. And like I said, I mean, movies have been made for what, over 100 years? We've had over 100 years of representation. Let's start sharing the spotlight a little bit.
Absolutely. And here's the thing, is that we should be talking about whitewashing, is that I think there are two kinds of whitewashing. One is worse than the other. Both are bad, but one is worse than the other. You have Mickey Rooney in quote-unquote yellowface portraying a Japanese landlord in Breakfast at Tiffany's. That is a white man portraying a different race.
Yes.
That is bad. And we've seen that happen to many extents. You know, like, we've seen it in biblical films. We've seen it a lot in biblical films. We've seen it in Shakespeare films. And we've seen it in, you know, modern day films and everything like that.
We've seen it in some schlock. I mean, the first thing that comes to mind for me when I think of that is Sean Connery in Highlander playing a Spaniard.
Yeah, right. You have things like that where certain times you can kind of move past it, like the Highlander thing, because he's like, oh, I'm Spanish. And you're like, yeah, he's not Spanish. But it would have been different, like, if they dyed his face.
Or do the, which film? Oh, You Only Live Twice, where they make Bond Japanese.
Well, remember that was a little different because, like,
know,
he was putting on
know,
makeup, but he wasn't.
I still love that movie, but it's like, oh, that part's really uncomfortable to watch today.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That would never get away with that today. So there's that, like, people putting on blackface or yellowface, you know, like that is very much taboo. And then there's a different kind of whitewashing, where you have traditionally minority characters being portrayed by white characters, but not as, it's not the white character saying I'm Spanish or I'm, you know, in blackface. It's just, oh, this character is white now.
So this would be the Benedict Cumberbatch's Khan situation.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That would be kind of that thing. Like one big example was in 2008, you had the movie 21.
Yes.
You remember this movie? Yes. With Kevin Spacey? Like this is based off of a true story. So that makes it even worse. Is that I can understand changing roles in a fictional story, but this was based off of a true story where a group of Asian American students and their teacher applied card counting to win in gambling and poker and everything like that. In the movie, I think there's one Asian person in the group, one Asian student, the rest are all just white. And this was a real thing. This was a true story.
Yeah, that's bad.
And that's the thing, is like, that is bad. That is whitewashing. Now, I don't think we should do that, obviously. And we should, you know, like, if these are historical characters, we should definitely try to maintain, you know, the race that they are.
Yes. I mean, no one would suggest making a movie about Martin Luther King and having Martin Luther King be white.
Right. Or actually, or anything else. But the thing is, we do it with biblical stuff all the time, which I am not going to get into on this show.
That's a whole nother can of worms.
That is a whole nother can of worms that we are not even going to touch with a 10-foot pole on this. But I do want to ask you a question about this, because in recent news, somewhat recent news, with a Ghost in the Shell.
Oh, the Scarlett Johansson thing. Yeah.
Right. It's an anime. And this anime was set in futuristic Japan, I think. Yeah, Tokyo. I think Tokyo. I could be wrong. I don't know it very well. But they were people were very angry because they're like, oh, that's a traditionally Asian role. Mm. And so we should keep it Asian, not Scarlett Johansson. Now, that I understand, especially if you're going to have it take place in Tokyo.
Yes.
But here's another thing. Here's an argument here. One of my favorite movies, The Departed, all right? That's a remake of an Asian film. That's an Asian storyline. But they set it in Boston. No one really talked about whitewashing there. So what's the difference?
You know, I don't know, because I wonder if was the story behind The Departed well known?
No. Well, I mean, it was a popular movie in China.
I know it's a popular movie in China, but like when it came out, was it well publicized that it was a remake?
Because like, I don't think so.
Because just speaking from experience, I didn't even know until you told me that it was a remake when we were doing
okay. Well, now that you know, though, because that's the thing. Like, there's ignorance, but then there's being aware of the issue. Is right. Taking a story and changing the setting, changing the time, and changing the races. It, like, we can all recognize that changing the race is not always ideal,
right?
If it's at the expense of people of color. But if you change the setting, change the time, change the city, do you think that opens up the opportunity to cast whoever you want?
I think so, because you're taking it out of the place in which it was originally told. Having something take place where there wouldn't have to logically be a ton of members of a certain minority present, I think allows us to be okay with that disconnect. I think specifically if Ghost in the Shell is taking place in Asia somewhere, mm-hmm. then it's going to look a little strange that Scarlett Johansson is probably going to be the only Caucasian actress, because I'm pretty sure every other role is casted with an actor or actress of Asian descent.
Mm-hmm.
And she may very well be good in the movie, but it looks like from the outset that they casted Scarlett Johansson because she's a more marketable person.
Yes.
And not because she was necessarily correct for the role.
I'm so glad that you said that. I'm so glad that you said that, because Ridley Scott had and I love Ridley Scott. I used to work for the man. He had a horrible quote about his movie with Christian Bale and Joel Edgerton. About what was the name of the movie? Gods of Egypt or God? Oh, no, yeah. Gods and Kings.
God, Exodus.
Exodus. That's what it's called. Yeah, that was not a good movie. It was just it did not fail because of racial miscasting. It failed because it's a horrible movie. But he had a quote. I was so disappointed. I mean, I'm sure it's accurate, but it makes me sad that he said it. So here's the thing. Here's this quote, because like when confronted about, you know, casting white actors in these Egyptian roles, like, okay, here's the question. Exodus was visually overwhelming. You created that ancient world and brought the plagues and all the vivid horror, yada, 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 yada. You didn't hire indigenous actors in the lead roles. In hindsight, is there something you might have done differently? This was his response. Nah. Some have said, isn't Christ black? He could have been. It depends on what part of North Africa he comes from. But how do we know? The short, sharp, crude answer is, I couldn't get a film like that mounted for that kind of budget. We were $145 million, not $260 million, so that wasn't bad. But to make Moses black and his wife Ethiopian, they never would have made that movie. He's actually, I cannot find the quote right now, but he actually said something worse about how he said something. He's like, if I casted somebody in the lead called Muhammad what's-a-whatever, like that's never going to get funded. That was his response. Here is my response to that. If certain directors and certain production companies with as much clout as Ridley Scott has, how is it going to change?
Yeah, I was going to say, because, I mean, obviously the concern there is that he, I don't think he's necessarily, quote unquote, being racist in terms of, like, he is stating a truth about the way that industry works. Because, you know, it's a very sad truth, but it is a truth. That being said, though, when you're someone like Ridley Scott, or you're someone like Steven Spielberg, for example, mm-hmm. who, you know, people are not going to outright question your directorial choices because of the reputation that you have gained for yourself. And therefore, I think what you're trying to say, and shouldn't the argument be, well, if you've reached that status and you have that much power and ability, shouldn't the onus be on you to push change in that direction where something like that could be casted racially accurate and could get funding and show that these films should get made?
Yes. Yes, that is exactly what I'm saying, is that utilize your privilege for the benefit of others. Like, yeah, it could be hard for some young director who doesn't want to fight the production company, but you're Ridley Scott. You're Steven Spielberg. You're Martin Scorsese. You have the clout to do mostly what you want. And it's not even a stretch. It's not even saying, like, you know what? I want to make a movie where George Washington is Hispanic. You know, that's not what he's saying. It's just making it racially accurate.
Right. I'd like to create a movie that's set in Africa, and I'd actually like to use actors that are of African appropriate descent.
Right.
You know, I realize it's a crazy idea, everybody, but let's just try it.
Let's push the boundaries here. So that's what I'm saying. And so I don't know, like, we don't really have any answers to any problems. But I guess what Matt and I are trying to say is what we've kind of been a running theme for a long time with a lot of our shows is that let's stay positive. Let us stop trolling other people. Let's stop, you know, like, living in the past. Have an open mind. If it doesn't hurt the character, and it doesn't actually distort the character in any way except visually, especially with race.
And taking in the whitewashing question, as long as it doesn't hurt minorities either.
Yes. And that's the thing, is that, like, let us remember what Captain Revo said. You put a white person in a minority role, it hurts minority representation. You put a minority in a white role, it only helps minority representation and does not hurt white representation. This is a win. Instead of for some people, instead of a loss for everyone.
Right. Exactly. And you know what? To me, casting is only one part of it, the equation into my enjoyment of a product. It's, you know, casting is important. I'm not going to say it's not important, but I think it's much more important to have a good final product at the end of the day, rather than what color the actor's skin is.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, that is our show. Everyone, please, you know, let us know if you agree with us, disagree with us. And if you do disagree with us, we want to know. If you have a good, rational reason why you disagree with us, that's what we want to know. So you can email us at contact@thenerdparty.com. You can tweet us at @joinnerdparty. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/thenerdparty. Again, I say, if you have a good, reasonable, rational explanation as to why you disagree with us, please let us know.
Absolutely. And You can reach us personally at Twitter. I am at mhanson0207.
I'm at the Insane Robin.
So thank you so much for joining us on this very, very important discussion, I feel, on colorblind casting. And we will see you all next time. If there are people, so why should it be?